Hey, who doesn't like to go out to eat? Everybody loves to go out to eat. But do we really know what's happening behind the kitchen doors? Not very often. That's why you got to tune into this show. With one of the OGs here in Orange County.
Actually, two of them.
I got a couple OGs today here. Part of the old guard, the original gangsters, talking about the fine dining in Orange County then, today, and tomorrow, right here in Behind the Kitchen Doors with Chef Pascal. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for your introduction. But what's important today is to meet my guest.
Ah, please. I wasn't sure we'd even get his name because I'm wafting this bread. I'm absorbing the smell of it and everything here. And this is the guy who bakes it?
He is the man behind the bread. He's the Orange County baker, I would say, because his company is called OC Baking Company, and a very passionate man. And his name is Dean Kim, and we have a few stories, you know, but we know each other.
You guys go way back.
Well, not that way back.
Way back. Way
I think
back.
We go back to early 90s, something like
that's
that.
Pretty far back.
Yeah. And
now, I don't want to offend him right off the bat, but he looks more like an engineer or a rocket scientist, the type of people in this UCI building I see all the time. I don't see him as a baker.
Well, some part of his business, you have to act like an engineer. We're going
chemist.
To talk about all the logistic, a production, delivery system, everything. You know, that's you have to really be in command and give direction. I can I call you Chef? Chef Dean?
You call me Dean.
Dean?
I'm just a baker.
He just show up, you know, all night long at the bakery. And that. So, he does a night shift for sure. We met when Dean, our baker, was working for a small company called Bread on Spread. And I was buying some bread and some other stuff from that company. And then you can tell the following on the story. And then we're going to talk about what he's doing now. And the world of baking today. He's an extraordinary businessman and baker. So can you say how we met? How did you start your bakery?
I actually was working for a smaller bakery in Orange County called Breads and Spreads. It was kind of one of those things I just fell into. And then we were focused.
I guess stop here for 1 second. So were you a baker as a child? Do you have a family of bakers? Does anybody know how to bake in your family? What led you into baking?
Well, my family is all professional, like doctors in the medical field and business people. I fell into it because I think everyone who asked me, I said it was the smell. Mm-hmm. I smelled baked goods, and after that, I was like, "Oh my God,
you were hooked!
I got to figure out how to do this." And
so, did you you like bread?
I couldn't tell you I loved it or didn't love it. I figured out I loved the process of it.
Yeah.
Until this day, I still love the process because it's changing every day. Mm-hmm. You have to worry about the weather. You have to worry about the protein levels of your flour. I mean, there's so much science involved in it, but that's what really gave me the baking bug.
I take it from your name that you're from a Korean background?
I am Korean background. Yes.
I don't know Korean food that much. Is there a lot of baked goods? Any baked goods?
Nowadays, I think Asia has gone crazy with the baked goods.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they like a little French cafe and things like that. Yeah.
Like the banh mi, isn't that what I say?
But, you know, as a Korean, as a younger Korean kid growing up in California, all I knew was King's Hawaiian. That's what I loved, and that's what I ate all the time.
Sliced bread.
Super soft. It was in those pans, those pie pans, and I loved it. But then I started really getting into the more crustier style, the European-style breads, and the more longer fermented breads. and it just, it's such a great industry to be in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the beginning, I know my parents were not too crazy about my career choices.
They wanted you to be like most Koreans. I wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer.
But, you know, after a while, they figured, well, he's doing okay, you know. And now they are my biggest fans. So.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So when we met, and it was at my restaurant, also at my shop, and I was importing, actually, a famous bread from a famous bread maker in Paris,
Poulain.
And it was so expensive, you know, it was very hard to sell it back. And
Did they fly it in?
Yeah.
Because it would have to be fresh. Yeah.
Overnight. And then I could not sell more than a quarter because of the price for each loaf. And then so I contact Dean and say, can you do something similar? And he starts working on it. And every week he brings me a new one. What do you think? This is close to it? You know, so, and then it's a science. So you develop a science.
But, you know, remember back then, there's like the forefathers of Orange County culinary back then. There was you. There was Christian Rasno.
Yes.
There was Dominique Bière.
Yeah.
A handful.
There's only a handful of guys who, when you walk to see them, you're kind of intimidated, and if they told you to jump, you jumped. You figured out, okay, I can't piss this guy off.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Because it wasn't like there were 100 fine dining restaurants in Orange County.
There was a handful of, but these guys are the guys who brought culinary, in my opinion, a lot of fine dining into.
Yeah, we were the core.
Yeah.
Clearly. Because we were fast food suburbia, and still are to a certain degree, but. Not nearly what it was in the
90s. No, things change.
Yeah, I mean, back then, after I left the bakery, the only thing available was Del Taco, you know, or Denny's.
Yeah.
You know.
In-N-Out.
Yeah. No, not In-N-Out. Was closed. I left the bakery. But it was, when you had one of these chefs call you for whatever, you got up and you talked to them and you try to figure it out.
So how did you figure it out? Do you literally do chemistry? Do you just do trial and error? There was no Google. There was no YouTube. You can't just see, how do we make this?
I think it's more trial and error. You know, you have to figure out, okay, is it a Levant base? Is it a Biga? Is it a Poulish? You know,
what are all those? Those are different grains?
Different starters to start the bread off with. And what kind of flour percentages you use? You use whole wheat? Do you use a grainier whole wheat? Mm-hmm. And it's all about trial and error. And that's the beauty of baking. There's no one dead science. I mean, Pascal and I could have the same ingredients in front of us and the same recipes, but it's just the process could be different. Mm-hmm. It could be two totally different products. So,
I don't know enough about breaking, but I had to research a little bit. So you make some kind of starter. It's a blob of something, right? Yeast?
Yes.
And
yes.
It's like for vinegar. You have a mother and then the starter is...
Luckily, our mother is strong. Our liquid starter is strong. And I've had it going on for like 33 years
now.
And
I was going to say, that living organism literally, does it the same thing, or one generation turns into a next?
You know what? I think it evolves. If you feed it differently, it evolves. If you're in a different area, it has different bacteria to feed off, it evolves into that area. I started my starter in Napa, and now it's an Orange County starter, you know, because it has different bacteria to feed off of.
And will it live? It's a living, breathing organism. Will it live forever?
Yes. You could live it. There's people who've had starters for 500 years.
Oh, my God.
But you just have to treat it like a baby, you know?
Every day you have to
feed. Can you starve it or kill it? I mean,
you could kill it very easily.
If you forget it, to feed the starter, just die on you.
Yeah. It's very important. I think a lot of the bakeries that do sourdough or do some type of starter, their backbone is the starter to make sure it's taken care of.
So this is a precious thing. Somebody develops it, thrives, feeds it, keeps it alive, it evolves, it changes. And then what do you do with that? You take that, how does that turn into bread?
I think it depends also on what type of wheat you use as well.
Okay. I think the volume of product you use, you're constantly turning that starter out. You're building it up. You're turning it out. I feed my starter twice a day, and I make sure it's healthy. That's the first thing I check in the morning, and that's the last thing I check at night.
He's like a farmer. You need to cow the milk the goat twice a day.
For suburban kids like me, though, who've never seen anything made, I'm trying to picture it's a blob of dough and yeast and something here.
It's flour and water, and the bacteria you started off with, it could be grapes, it could be milk, whatever, but it's a living organism.
A bacteria
that, you know, helps build the structure of the bread. I mean, look at the bread. Look at the blistering effect, the crust, the flavor, and everything. Mm-hmm. It all comes out from a base starter.
And then how do you take the starter and turn it into bread? I don't understand the process.
Well, you get that is your base. It could be your leavening like a sourdough. That mm-hmm. starter is your leavening. So it's about like maybe up to 40% of your recipe with your regular flour, with your salt and water. And then you...
So you take this just regular flour and salt, water, mix up the kind of the dough, but somehow it doesn't turn into bread until you, infuse it with the bacteria somehow?
Yeah, you mix it all together and let the bacteria do its work.
Yeah, and then there's the chemistry works on its own.
Yeah.
That's why you have to let it sit. I mean... Let it sit and rise.
There's so many arguments, but plus... With that starter, you get a longer shelf life. You get a better flavor.
You do. Because that's the opposite. I would have thought this stuff has a shorter shelf life than the stuff in the store filled through with preservatives.
I guess I'm not sure about that. But this looks like a regular baguette.
Right.
But it's not. When that baguette at first, I don't know if I'm bragging too much, but you create that starter baguette when I requested a few years ago, and you did par bake for me.
Yes.
And then we bake it again at
did that for a reason, because baguettes, a lot of people love baguettes, but the shelf life on a baguette's terrible.
Yeah, but
you have to eat it that same day.
You can feel it, weight.
Yeah.
Most of the baguettes you buy is just nothing.
Yeah.
And a baguette is what? It's a style of French bread that's very popular in French.
Yeah, but this one is fermented, and you can see the difference. Look at that. Look.
And what does it mean, fermented? It means that
it's like it basically, you give it as much time as possible for the flour to develop and the dough to develop properly before you throw it in the oven.
And what keeps it, because obviously beer is fermented, grapes are fermented, so what keeps it from becoming alcohol, from the bacteria eating?
You have to know
sugar?
How to control it.
Yeah.
And know when to bake it. And know when to mix it properly, and there's different stages involved in it. And you know, beer is kind of like is almost the same process as sourdough.
It's a yeast.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's a yeast, and it's dough, and they make a mash out of it.
Yeah.
Even Dean put sometimes potatoes, like cook potato into the dough and make potato bread. Mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, you have to look at the pH of the bread and... Whatever you put in that bread, you have to be very careful. Like sun-dried tomatoes, it turns into the acid. It ends up eating up the bread. So you have to kind of, it's a quick batch.
So could you create an alcoholic bread? Would the fermentation process be
with
the same
beer.
In bread? Is that what beer is sort of?
Well, beer, there's different types of, like grog is kind of a bread, but it's alcoholic. But it's almost like a little sturdier pudding, but it still has a lot of alcohol content. With bread, you kind of control it where the alcohol doesn't go crazy, but yet you kind of trying to find a balance in between.
You know, Paul, you can always take a piece of bread and dip in your wine, you know?
Yeah.
But because I've watched them, microbreweries and stuff, make beer in particular, and they have what looks like, you're talking about, a starter, a yeast, a dough, or something, a mash, they call it. And then they add water, and then the yeast starts eating the sugar and spits out alcohol, right?
Yeah, but even still, the brewing process takes a long time, you know. So I think just like bread, you have to be patient. Let the bread tell you when it's ready.
Mm. So look at the baguette.
Okay.
It has this little bump, right?
That baguettes have a very distinct look to them.
Yeah. It's okay. The French love
in front
of a little something.
You got to keep in front of the mic there. Yeah.
He has a little bump, and that means, you know, that's good fermentation. and you can see it's airy inside, you know, and so it's fluffy and airy. It's fantastic. Great for sandwiches.
And how does it get crusty on the outside? Is that the baking?
It's a fermentation and the baking. I tend to go with a little bit of a higher temperature. And plus, you know, you've seen my ovens. I have big hearth ovens and I do have convection ovens, but it's how you attack the bread. Plus the steam injectors involved help set up the crust really well. So, you know, it's important that, I mean, that's all through experience and seeing how people do it. I'm like, oh, well,
so
that's how you do it.
Let me ask another technical question. What little I know about baking. So we had somebody in from La Reina Bakery, which is Mexican breads, sweet breads, pan dulce, and some other things. They were on the Hispanic show. And he was talking about they still do it old school, the grinding of the grain, stone ground. Does any of that matter, how you get the grain?
I think if you could do it, God bless you. You know, I mean, for me...
impractical.
It's not very practical for me, although, you know, there's nothing like a bread that's stone ground or...
Exactly.
You know, it's
and
the
why?
Best thing in the
that's
world.
That's what they were talking about. That's why they were so proud of it. Now they do it in smaller batches, obviously, here.
Yeah, yeah. It has to be a small batch. But you should see in Europe the...
Giant wheels
and things like that. And then the powder that come out of it is fantastic. But look at it. This is a sourdough bowl, correct?
Yes.
So you can see a different bump, a different fermentation. Still have a nice crust, but no, it's a
well, they look dramatically different.
Crust.
One's puffy and brown, and the other one is long and golden.
This one is different because it's probably more the whole wheat almost.
Believe it or not, it does have a little bit of whole wheat. Yeah. It is a poolish base. And it's more like a...
What is poolish? I don't know.
It's a starter, but it's just flour, water, and a little bit of yeast. And you let the dough grow, and that's your basis of the bread. So what this bread, which I like, it's kind of like a peasant bread. It's something you see at a dinner table that people just grab a hunk out of bread and eat their
My sauces. Grandparents used to have that kind of bread. You know, that's a bread that you buy once a week. You keep it the entire week. It's still good.
The whole week? It's still, as opposed to a baguette, which would go bad in a day.
No, it was, this kind of baguette.
French people, it's a sin for you to waste anything.
when we start the baguette, well, I have a little story. Because I used to go buy my mother and say, go buy a baguette. All right.
So in Normandy, back in France.
So I go on my bicycle, I go to the baker, and then I come back with the baguette. Mm-hmm. And she always say, why are we missing both hands?
Who took the ends?
On the way back home.
Who chewed on this bread?
The bread. And bakers also. All right. Baker's schedule. All right. Especially now, we don't have big bakery in every corner like in France.
Nor do we have delivery. When I was a kid, they had Helm's Bakery and other things that would come to your house in a truck.
Yeah, but no.
I'm not saying the same quality, but the idea of fresh bread would come.
Yeah, we're baked store. Sometimes they have pastry, or sometimes they say, oh, I don't do pastry, I just do bread.
Right.
And when you go out late on the weekend at night, and before you go home at 2 or 3 in the morning, and you say, oh, I need to eat something. So you go in the back of the bakery, and then you can smell the baking, and you knock, say, can I buy a couple of fresh baguettes? So you used to buy those fresh baguettes hot of the oven.
At 11 o'clock at night or something.
No, even later than that.
2 in the morning.
Okay. You need to tell Paul, what's your schedule?
I'm usually up, believe it or not, by 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh.
And I usually get home. I try to have at least one meal with my wife. And then I'm usually back at the bakery. I usually stay there from 8 to 9. And that's pretty much 6 days a week.
Wow.
On Sundays, I usually go there early in the morning and I get there like around 5 o'clock in the morning. I spend about till about 3, and then I go home.
You have to say, Chef Dean is victim of his own success.
I guess so, right? He's been
and
trapped by his own
success. He worked very hard, and he's so nice and generous. You can tell, but he has a tough time to say no to chef. Someone say, can you make me that special bread?
Mm. You know why? Because I think more now I realize this. And all the younger kids who got out of culinary school, all the new restaurateurs who just wanted to open up a restaurant, I don't think they realize what business we're in. And I always tell them, what business are you in? Oh, I want to do sweets. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What business are you in? I want to make a hamburger shop. Okay. Okay. And what business is that? Oh, we're feeding people. No, we're in hospitality. Mm. If you don't get that, service, then you should start all over again.
Right.
You have to realize I'm not a baker. Yeah. I'm not in the baking business. I'm in the hospitality business. Yeah. I'm here to please the client. Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot of people forget that.
And because we've gotten into the mechanization of everything, and we want to get into the scalability of it. Is McDonald's in the hospitality business? Maybe at some level, but they are probably in a production. They're producing hamburgers.
But I think that's a downfall. I think that's why a lot of people right now are complaining about service at a restaurant or gratuity at a restaurant, right?
Or prices at a restaurant.
I remember you told me something a long time ago. And it makes sense. And to this day, I said, the food could be marginally average, but the service is excellent. I'm going to go back there all the time.
Yeah.
Now, if the restaurant is, the food is excellent, but the service is terrible, I'm not going back, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think people are losing the focus of hospitality.
And talking about service, before I forget, how many kinds of bread do you do every day?
I'm stupid.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's the worst business concept.
It's not a good business model.
I think I do like an average of over 110 different types of breads daily.
Oh, no. You got to do 3 or 4, and that's what you make, and you crank them out. No.
Well, who were you 30 years ago to tell me that? You know, I mean, Lord. No. You know, my life would be, I often think that, oh, my God. King's Hawaiian, if I just did one bread.
Yeah. Bread. You make
that's
this
it,
bread.
You know? Right. And even when I go to sandwich shops and they're like, oh, I want like 8. No. Cut it down to 3 different breads. Mm-hmm. It's too much SKUs and too much inventory. And I said, but if you think about all of the great sandwich shops, usually just one type of bread.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, white or whole wheat.
You know, like I said, I'm in the hospitality business, and a chef asked me to do something, I'm going to do it.
So what kind of, I'm picturing how many types of bread there are. I'm from suburbia. There's 2 or 3 on the shelf. There's rye bread. There's wheat bread.
I do seeded rye. I do marble rye. I do a straight rye, a dinner rye. I do French baguettes. I do Polish baguettes. I do par-baked baguettes. All different size of rolls. Dinner rolls, so many to come across. I do brioche, cinnamon raisin brioche. Cinnamon brioche,
but
I do.
Paul, you say about, you know, being caught up in the modern world.
Yeah.
He has to, because he needs to face the production. You know, if I call Dean and say, next week I need 1,500 rolls, can you do that? Sure, no problem. How big of a roll you want.
But unlike a traditional business, he doesn't just go off the shelf and take 1,500 pre-made parts.
No, just make it fresh that day.
It's funny, because some chefs call me last minute for that stuff, and I go, when do you need it?
In an hour.
I remember Montage called me because they needed a 8-foot-long challah. Okay. And I said, okay, I'm not kosher. You know that. And they're like, it's okay. Last minute, we need it. And I go, okay. When you need it.
Because challah is a Jewish bread.
It's a Jewish bread. They need it
for traditionally has to have certain kosher guidelines and stuff.
And he called me at 8 o'clock in the morning. I go, okay, so tomorrow, when do you need it? And he said, I need it by 11 o'clock. Oh. I go, are you kidding me? And he goes, can you do it? And I go, I could try. You know, I'll do my best. So I was at the mixer, and all of my mixers and the bakers were looking at me because I was just throwing yeast in there. I go, I don't do what I do. Just do what I say. I shaped it, baked it, I mean, it was proofing up so fast with the amount of yeast I put in there. Baked it, got out of the oven by 10:15. I put it on a board, threw it in my car, drove to the montage.
Unbelievable.
And made somebody's day. Made somebody's special event. It's so funny. Celebration.
But the receiver was kind of mad because the bakery was supposed to be doing, didn't, and I was like, it was an emergency. I came down and he goes, okay, where's the invoice? I go, I'm not charging you for that. Someone's going to get sick off of that bread with all the yeast in there. You know, I was like, forget
you
that.
You would feel bad.
Yeah. So I said, just take it and I'm out of here. You know?
So in today's modern world, this is what I'm fascinated with. How many, does the consumer have a taste for 100 different style breads, or we've just been trained to get the 3 or 4 off the shelf?
I think it's all about selection and people who, like places that serve wine and are wine restaurants, they're not going to serve sourdough because the tannins in the sourdough affects right. the flavor of the wine.
Although I've been to wine tasting with sourdough bread and, you know.
Well, I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah.
I do too. Because it overpowers.
Well, the acidity in your mouth is just destroying the taste.
You know, I mean, then we have restaurants like The Ranch in Anaheim who, it's elegant dining, but their roll is like 7 intricate rolls in a marguerite, you know, and, you know, that's what they like. It really depends on their menu and what they want to use.
Well, their menu is a signature roll.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could go to Mastro's, you get like a lavash. People want to see a lavash. They want to see something dark. They want to see a crusty roll. They want to see a soft roll. Yeah. So it's all about selections.
And do you also bake like... I mean, I want to call them crackers, but flatbreads or other
I do. I hate doing it, but I'll do it if someone asks me.
Why do you hate to do it? At least you do focaccia.
Yeah, I do focaccia, but the lavash, I do for people.
Because that's like a sort of a cracker to me, a lavash.
So. But focaccia is amazing.
Yeah. So why do you hate doing crackers?
It's unless you don't have a sheeter and you do that by hand, it is very time consuming and... You know, for what it is, it's just a cracker. You know, that's all it is. It's a cracker.
It's a cracker.
Yeah. You know.
And how many clients do you have? Because not only the bake, you have an order desk on the very well trained. You know, they really know you, and they take your order and they say, okay,
they probably have a sales group that goes out and specially designs stuff if you want something.
You know what? I tendly get at my customers mostly by word of mouth. I've had salespeople before, and it just never works out because I'm fortunate enough where I could just walk in the back of the kitchen and... Yeah. In my jeans and t-shirt and talk to the chef, and they're like, okay, this is what
say,
I
need. Hey, can I talk to the chef?
Yeah.
He has a piece of bread.
Here's another one. Here's a modern idea. Do you have like a test kitchen? If I'm opening a restaurant, can I come and experiment and you show me different ideas to stand out?
I encourage chefs to come to my bakery because there might be something on the shelf or something that I'm making that will totally change their bread idea and what they want to do.
Yeah.
You know? Talking about that. At the bakery, you do some pop-ups.
Yes.
So when there's pop-ups, he has all kind of bread in display that you can buy that give you an idea what...
That's what I'm saying. So I want to do something different in my restaurant, and I don't want just the same old bread. So I want a signature bread, a signature loaf, a signature bun, something special. Mm-hmm. Your guy who was doing the smash burgers had special buns and everything here.
Yes.
Brioche and buns and stuff here. So could I come to you and you'll help me come up with my own signature OC Talk Radio bun here?
Oh, definitely.
Why don't you pick something you already made? Don't give me
more. No, I want something unique, you know, special.
I mean, right now I'm doing these buns for Coastal Cowboy in San Juan Capistrano.
Okay.
And they're getting like a red pepper bun.
Ah, that's what I was getting at. Give me something crazy. A red pepper bun. Right.
Or angels when they call me out of the blue, which I hate. I have to do a red bun for them when they're doing the season.
Of course, yeah.
You know, the most craziest thing was SoFi Stadium. They had a Star Wars theme thing, and they asked me, do you know what the Millennium Falcon is? And I go, yeah, of course I do.
Yeah.
I want a bun that color. I go, how the hell am I going to make a bun?
Same color as the
rusted gray. You guys are.
Why you breaking my buns?
Yeah. You use some squid ink.
Oh my god! And squid ink. How many chef's coats or aprons have you and I ruined because of squid ink?
Yeah, terrible.
You know, I was like, you can't wash that stuff out.
That's kind of a trendy now to have squid ink. And now even in France, they do. I don't know if you do it here. Where they do ashes.
Yes.
Ashes in bread.
You know. Well, now people are still getting away from squid ink, and now they're using charcoal.
Charcoal.
Yeah. Mean.
Real charcoal?
Yeah. Yes. A little food-grade charcoal.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And
all right, so how many you don't tell us all the secrets or how big your business, but I take it it's pretty big. And I take it you have lots of restaurant clients. Give us some idea. I don't even know how many restaurants are in Southern California here.
From down in L.A. all the way up to San Clemente, I figure we do about a little – maybe over 100.
Oh my god!
Something like that, maybe more.
Wow. So that's why I mean.
Wow.
From the other desk, and then they have to do the logistic of delivery.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, because every restaurant wants their bread before they open. You know, so most of the mornings are crazy busy back to back delivery.
Yeah, I think my vans leave the bakery usually around 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock for further routes. But you know, COVID taught me something. Now I'm kind of tightening up because I don't want to do bread for everyone.
No.
You know, there's no use. It's so crazy. Just,
well, I know you had a tough time to find enough baker at one point. You look like now you cannot
but,
find
you know,
the balance.
I kind of like went back and I said, you know what? I'm going back to what I know is bread.
Yeah.
So I started spending more time with the bakers, telling them my ideas on bread, and trying to infuse the passion that infused me to make me who I am now.
So you mean you still have the passion?
I still have the passion.
Yes.
Good.
That's incredible, because usually businesses grow, the passion dies. Pascal says this sometimes. You got one restaurant, you're passionate. You got 20 restaurants, I'm not so passionate. I'm running a...
That's the whole thing. I think I downsized enough where... Now I could train a little better, you know. For God's sake, at one point I didn't
know.
I don't
think you don't sign that much, but you restrict it.
Yeah, but now, I mean, back then, you know, I had over 100 employees.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't know anyone's name.
Right, and you never touched, you probably don't get into the bakery very often. You're doing payroll or you're doing projections. You're doing cost analysis. You're doing production.
I think with everything bakery-wise, I think I adapted to learn how ordering should be done, how delivery should be done, how routes should be set up, how, you know, the mix schedule should be set up, how the bake schedule should be set up. It's all stuff that I think as a business owner, you have to kind of dabble in everything I'm going to admit you, I'm a control freak. And
so I'll do a specific baker. Okay. You have a baker who's going to just do baguettes, and the bakers just do sourdough. How do you say, okay, for tomorrow we need 100 of this, 120 of this, 500 of that? How do you give them all notes with an
order? Write it on a board, computer?
I believe with this stage of employees, you have to hit them with everything. Write a note, write a memo, write an order sheet, add-on sheet. Have them read it and sign it, right? Then I'll go back to them and I'll tell them again, that's how you do it. And then I'll tell them, this is how I want it. And I'll have them feel it.
But the quantity, the daily preparation.
I think everything is doable.
Because you don't want to overdo.
No. But there's times where my bakers are like, I only got an hour left. I go home. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'll do it. It's okay. It's not a big deal. You know, I'm a trained baker too. I could do it. You know,
what do you do with your excess bread? Do you give it away?
A lot of it goes to different organizations, Bracken Kitchen, and all that stuff.
You love Bill Bracken, yeah.
Yeah, Bill is always a good
you're
man.
Always with him. Yeah, walk to you. I've seen you walking together.
That's one thing about Bill. I can't say no to the guy. Although I could whine as much as I can to him, but I ultimately gotta say yes.
You never whine. Yeah.
How about the food banks, the second harvest of the world? And all that kind of
we do, whoever needs bread, we donate whoever needs it, you know. And I came with a philosophy of, even at the farmer's market, I give away like up to 30 to 40% of my bread
on the
table. Because
you really are bad business.
I don't want anyone to be without a loaf of bread at home.
You know, the inn on the OC Baking Company, every Saturday, is selling bread and orange in the orange-grown farmer's market.
Homegrown farmer's market, yes.
So that was my next question. Can I, the consumer, go taste your bread, or do I have to get it at a restaurant?
You could go to the Orange Homegrown Farmer's Market. You could get it every Saturday. We're there. And
go early.
Yeah, and then usually, like Thanksgiving coming up, Pascal knows this because he always there. We open up the bakery the day before Thanksgiving for people to get their baked goods and pies and whatever they need. We have a bunch of
pies and stuff too?
No, my friends do, yeah. And I bring a bunch of vendors in the bakery.
Send my coffee though.
Yeah. And they could get all.
But that's just once a year. People can come to the actual bakery.
Sometimes twice a year.
We do it. Basically, two times a year, the day before Thanksgiving and
Easter, no?
I think it's going to be the day before Christmas Eve.
Oh, Christmas
Eve. Yeah.
Easter, when we're in the Midwest, I'm part Polish, was a big baking holiday. People would bake donuts and cakes and stuff for Easter celebrations. I don't know if that's big out here, but.
But, you know,
Thanksgiving and Christmas is the only 2 days I really do it because I like giving my guys a break.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I have to bring you something they may not know.
Okay.
The timing of everything then today is unbelievable. Tomorrow is the World Bread Day.
Oh, I knew that. I figured that's why you coordinated.
You knew that.
I figured that's why you put this together. World Bread Day. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
And there's this new show with Tony Shalhoub about breaking bread.
Yes.
On CNN. You have to watch
it. Oh, yeah, definitely.
What is it about? We asked one of the other guests to say, what is it about breaking bread together that brings people together, that creates a warmth? If we sit down and eat, that's one thing, but if we physically break bread and physically do something like that, I don't know, is that just an old-fashioned tradition or is that real?
Well, it's biblical.
Yeah, biblical, yeah.
And I'm a firm believer breaking bread with someone is a very important transaction between a relationship, you know. I mean,
How so? I'm not disagreeing, but how so? What do you see?
If you see a family in Italy or France, you know, they don't cut up bread. You go out, you grab a hunk of bread, and you eat it. And it's just, I think people don't realize that breaking bread is a symbolic action to do, especially with someone you respect and you love and you care for. You know, breaking bread is, it's a saying, but like I said, it's biblical.
It's not a saying, it's beautiful, because bread is, especially in Europe, it's in with every meal.
Yeah, but you know, French people take bread a little too, they're crazy with bread.
Oh, they're nuts.
Oh, I remember, I'm not sure who, I thought it was
like
you.
The Irish are in their whiskey here. It's a big deal.
I remember I was doing a bread tasting with Edward V. Canoe.
Yeah.
And I cut out some bread. He tasted it. It was good. The rest I just discarded. And he slapped me.
Yeah.
And I was like,
you don't trash bread.
And then he told me, you know, if you're in my country, I'd kill you.
Yeah.
And I was like,
oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
All right. So let me show you something. Talking about the...
Before you do that, though, I have to give you one bit of useless knowledge. I just looked up on Wikipedia. I knew this before, and I just wanted to look it up. Do you know when sliced bread started? Wonder Bread was the first company to... That's how they made their name.
Yes,
they were the first company to cut a loaf of bread and pre-cut it. It was in 30.
He has to be a British bread.
Wonder bread. And so I grew up as a child. That's all we ate was Wonder bread, that white gooey bread. Uh-huh. And the beauty of it was we didn't have to break it. It was sliced. You just pulled it out of the bag.
Yeah.
And we spread something on it. And
for me, I wonder if that's really bread. So at the table,
yes,
before dinner or lunch, you have a baguette at home. The family, or that was my brother, my mother, my dad, and I, take the bread, either a big one like this or a small one. Just for a biblical thing, do a cross under the bread.
I've heard that, and I've forgotten about that. Yeah, why is it? Just the blessed bread. Yeah.
And
I'm a good Catholic. I should know that.
You go to church, you're supposed to eat bread.
Yeah.
And then it's a bad thing to put the bread like this on the table.
You're kidding. I didn't know that. That's bad luck.
It has to be like this.
So there is an art to handling the bread and serving the bread.
Bread is sacred. Because bread, you always say the dad worked hard to bring bread at the table.
So made some bread.
And especially like these days, some people don't eat it much. But if we bring them something to make something like bread, even if it's a tortilla or some anything, they can live on it.
So my other question we talked about beforehand, I agree with everything you're saying. Bread's a beautiful product. It's been made for centuries, particularly in European countries here, and it's a part of their culture and how they eat and what they eat. However, I grew up in America in the 60s, and bread was Wonder Bread. We moved away from making it. It came in a bag. It had preservatives, sat on the shelf forever. There was no art to serving it. It was nothing special about it, but it was there. And I wonder if that took us so far away from baking. We all forgot how to bake. We didn't bake. We don't know how to bake. We don't know what a fresh baked good tastes like. But that seems to have changed in the last few years. Is that true? Are we coming back to this?
I think, yes, definitely. Like I said, I think during COVID, when supermarkets didn't have bread.
Yeah.
And that's how the pop-ups, created the pop-ups. I think a lot of people who needed bread started making it at home. Mm-hmm. And now they have like cottage license, small little micro bakeries all popping up all over the place. And started off during COVID, which is not a bad thing, which is great.
And rediscovered the art of making this bread.
I have to say 20, 25 years ago, there was a trend that people, they have the old bread maker.
Yeah.
I saw that too, yes.
Right. But you get tired of it because it's not that great. It's just kind of pushing.
But you felt like you were making it. And
it smelled good.
Right.
And you can be creative.
Came with its own little flour, everything in it. Yeah. Just add water and you throw it in the machine.
Yeah.
Right. So you felt like you were making bread.
So the bread now that we know is sacred, and if we can put bread on the table, we have life. But the French average eat 120 baguettes per habitant a year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. We eat a lot of baguettes.
So I'll shock you again. So all the years I grew up at home, 18 years, till I went to college, never once did I or any of my friends ever have a baguette on a thing. We had a loaf of bread from the store. We'd never seen a baguette till we went to like France or something or New Orleans.
You want to know if you are buying a good baguette?
Please.
Weigh it? Yes.
Should it be light or heavy?
Heavier than lighter.
If it's super light, that means it's a heavily yeasted product and it's mostly the yeast, so it's light. So all my bread, I like a little bit of girth to it.
Texture.
Yeah.
Heft.
I
would have thought the opposite. I would have thought light is fairy and light as seems good.
And you need to smell. You need to have a smell when you cut.
But, if you think about it, bread is, in my opinion, is a recession-proof business.
Really? Okay, how so? We're all looking for recession-proof.
During the depressions, bakeries thrived. And I hate to say it, prisons, all of that, they gave them a bunch of bread because it gave them enough nourishment and it got them full.
Right.
So bakeries always...
Bread and water.
Yeah, bread always did well. And when it comes down to it, even COVID, people just want to go to back to comfort. Mm-hmm. And bread is comfort.
I remember buying a lot of Parbeck bread during COVID that I was selling from the side, from the back door of my kitchen. Uh-huh. People were looking for bread. So I said, well, I have some in the freezer. How many you want? I want 12 baguettes. Boom. Gone.
You know, because during COVID, I remember we were all locked down.
Yeah.
We were doing nothing.
Yeah.
All of us, you know, even my employees. I mean, there's so much they can mop and clean in the bakery. But I remember one of the local people told me, Dean, do you have any bread at the bakery? I go, no, you know what? No, yeah. I only make a couple of loaves here and there just for testing now. But if you want, come get it. Yeah. And then he said, the supermarkets don't have any bread. And I go, what are you talking about? And I, like you, we hardly go to supermarkets because we just go to the source and get our food there. And I, when I went to three different – I went to Stater Brothers. I went to Ralph's. I went to Vaughn's. All the baking shelves were empty, and I could not believe it. And I remember I called one of my best friends, Tarit Tandasari, Crema Artisan. He has a bakery too. And I said, hey, listen, we're not doing anything. I'm gonna make – it's not even employees here. I have flour. I'm going to make a bunch of bread. I'm going to post it online and say, hey, I'm opening up the bakery. People could come in and buy bread.
Wow.
And he took it as, you go ahead and try it. If it works, I'll think about coming down. And then I called him that day, and I go, oh, my God, you won't believe it. I sold out on all the bread in like 3 hours. It was crazy. I don't have a crumb left. And he goes, I'll be there tomorrow. And that's what started the pop-up.
Yeah. And how do we find the pop-ups? Or where do they?
It's like at the bakery in Orange. It's 1960 North Glacel in Orange, California. The doors are open. You'll see the signs. But that's how it started. The whole pop-up started. And then we saw the need for the people. So all the essential workers, the nurses and the doctors, were delivering bread for free to all the hospitals because they couldn't leave. So all of them, everyone got free bread. And then next thing you know, I mean, the bakery was getting packed full of people just buying stuff. And I'm like going, oh, my God. You know, but
so two more questions, and then we got to wrap up here. One is, are there lots of people in the baking business, and how do you get into the baking business today? Is there a school at the culinary schools that they teach you how to bake?
There's the American Institute of Baking in Kansas City. There's a lot of baking classes all over San Francisco Baking Institute. But if you do open up a bakery, remember, just like a restaurant, it is super expensive. Equipment, super expensive.
The utility costs and
running. Utilities, everything in any type of business, especially restaurant, hospitality, is super expensive.
You got heat, and, you got ovens, you got electric mixers, all that stuff.
And before, you need to have delivery trucks too.
I thought when I was younger, they always said always have like 3 months worth of revenue to cover the bills.
Clearly. But
nowadays, I think if you're going to open up a business,
6 months.
You need at least a year to 2 years worth of backup money.
Wow.
Just in case.
To ride the waves.
To ride the waves, because you just don't know.
So are there lots of bakers? I really don't know of many.
There are a lot of bakeries now. There are a lot of bakeries out there.
There's some very large ones, too.
Yeah. I mean.
But not of that quality.
Most of the bakeries I think of are public bakeries. So you would go to, what's the big friend, the one they always talk about? I think this was one at Disney.
Bodine.
Yes.
Bodine is a great bakery, and they do a great job. I'm on the kind of the smaller, medium-sized bakery.
But you've got a niche, however you say it, with restaurants.
Not only with restaurants, for stadiums, for anyone who needs specialized product, they usually call me.
And big quantities and specialized products. Okay.
And what's amazing, one thing I wanted to say. When you buy bread, industrial bread, because this bread, you know, there's three or four ingredients.
Right.
That's it. Huh? Except if you have walnut or sesame seed,
whatever. Not preservatives and other things.
But if you buy bread, packaged bread in a store, please look at the label.
100 things you won't recognize.
You got to read the label, because it's food color. There's a stabilizer. So the bread doesn't get bad after 2 days.
Right.
So please.
Flavor enhancer.
Very. The thin lines. If it's more than 2 lines on the ingredient
more
list.
Than 3 ingredients, worry.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think I've had bakeries or people ask me to add these ingredients in. I go, I don't even know how.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't do it.
Yes,
chemistry.
Yeah,
that's not what I do.
And you know, good bread is good for you. Give you some acid fluoric, which makes you to digest. It's actually, bread is good for your health. You know, don't overdo.
That would be something. Do you ever put like acidophilus in or other sorts of things to enhance the bacteria growth, like a yogurt does?
No, absolutely not. I think that's one thing I just... For the next owner of OC Baking Company, do whatever you want. But since I'm the owner here, I'm just doing what I know. And that's all I know.
And that's my last question. What do you know about the future of bread? Is it all going to be robots making it? Or is there a new flavor coming out?
Well, the difference between restaurants and bakeries, in a sense, especially bakeries at like my level. We can mechanize more.
Right.
Have machines do more. Mm-hmm. But in restaurants, you can't tell a machine to cook a duck or plate it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. So, they're experimenting. Go up to the new Tesla restaurant in at West Hollywood. They got robots flipping the burgers and stuff here.
But see, a machine can do that, but it will be too perfect.
Yeah.
This is, they have a little special knife. Check, 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 check.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Every baker has his own touch, you know?
Yeah.
His own signature.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think overall, if someone who doesn't know bread looks at these loaves, they're like, oh my God, that looks ugly. Mm-hmm. But there's a beauty to that ugliness. And it is, you know, you could eat it.
I'm going to break some bread.
Please do. Let's break bread together as we leave. What in any? Tell me a flavor that's hot these days. What are people trying?
Everyone's sourdough. Everyone is a sourdough fan, and everyone is. I think everyone's now going more to the neutral type of bread.
Because my father used to. He came from a Polish neighborhood. He used to love the Russian rye and the really strong bread.
I love rye.
Good rye.
I love a good rye because it's the best thing in the world. But. If you ask me, I just go with something plain, like a plain Italian loaf or a baguette, and that's
my one back here. So, is there anything that I should be looking for? This is the new trend. Everybody's talking. You said sourdough's hot. How about like flavor? You're talking about raisins, walnuts, all sorts of other things.
I do that too, but
Wow,
it's fluff. That's all it is to me. You know, eat bread for what it is. You know. That's why I do all those SKUs, because, you know, people keep on asking you to add stuff on bread,
right.
You know, so.
But is there anything better? I'll leave with this. Is there anything better than what I'm tasting here right now? Just good, fresh, baked bread.
Yeah. Come to the bakery.
Yeah.
20 minutes after the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could hear the crust setting and.
Love to.
Yeah. Bread communicates to me. I know I may sound like a lunatic.
See, we don't test tiny bit salt, but you can still test the saltiness.
Uh-huh.
And there's no sugar there, and we can
no.
So that's what can be better than that. Maybe
it's not overpowering. So many breads today. I see all these specialty breads, and that's not bread. There's so much stuff: 47 cheese and walnuts and raisins.
No,
and
but here you just put a little French salt butter on it, and then
go.
Well,
you're happy.
I'm a stupid baker, so all I know is bread. But you know, like I said, I like the simplicity of bread.
All I know is you're doing God's work. This from Chef
One
Pascual.
Quick question.
Yeah,
is sometimes some. You have requests for something organic? Because this is pretty much organic.
Yes.
Maybe not the base.
The flour is not organic.
It's too complicated to get organic.
Well, organic, once you go organic, that's where you fall into like the $20 loaves of bread.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I want to keep my bread still marginally priced where people could afford it, you know.
And is it really organic? Because it's... Oh.
Well, I don't know. I have my theories, but I don't want to get in trouble, so I'm not going to say anything.
And not a well-defined word.
Yeah, so...
Anybody can say it's organic.
I think they said, like, if it's 20% organic, you could say it's organic.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I order flour. I think any good baker could get whatever flour, and they can manipulate the bread.
To conclude, I would say... He doesn't make organic bread, but he makes passionate bread.
Yeah. Mm.
Full of passion.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'll try.
All right. How do they reach you if they want to find out more? It doesn't sound like very often they can get it directly from you, but once in a while maybe. What's the name of the company, website, and everything?
It's OC Baking Company. You could look under ocbakingco.com. And we're at the Orange Homegrown Farmers Market every Saturday. And for all you guys out there, it's worth going to the pop-up. You'll see Pascal. You'll see me. For fresh product, we have pies, cake, pasta, coffee.
And where's that at? That's at where?
At the bakery at 1960 North Glacel. It's in a big warehouse.
Using a pop-up, so it's not always there once?
It's not always there. It's there for the day before Thanksgiving. Get your fresh rolls, whatever you need for your Thanksgiving holiday. And we'll be there the day before Christmas Eve.
I'll be there. You'll see me.
Look at our social medias, and you'll find out more.
We will break bread together.
We'll break
bread
definitely.
Together. A sacred act. I'm going to take that away. You said bread is sacred. I think I've never thought of it that way.
Yes.
I thought it was pedestrian. It's ordinary. Bread. I need bread. I go to the back of the store and get bread. That's not a religious experience, but I'm a religious guy, so maybe it is. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, who knew? Bread is a sacred experience. There's a sacred art to it. And we're coming back and discovering more of it right here behind the kitchen doors every week with Chef Pascal on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.